Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most positively should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is March 17th, and this is episode 23, with regard to the always-on paradigm. Of course, as a quick note for all y'all out there in internet radio land, following the sad, sad news a few weeks ago that Rock Band DLC was coming to a head this April, as well as this week's news that Dance Central was going the same route.
Spoilers.
We here on the good ship Game Buoy were plotting out a rhythm gaming episode, but just around the apex of our putting that together, something important to the industry happened. EA released SimCity. And you probably already know why that changed the course of our ship. So with all apologies, we are sorry for postponing our rhythm gaming episode. Please look forward to it as you wait a little longer. For now, though, let's revisit a few hot topics.
First, I need to say, though, why did you just say all y'all? You're not from the South.
Because that's how we talk in the hood. By which I mean on pirate ships that are actually my apartment. Our first follow-up today, we have Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag officially confirmed for the PlayStation 4. I don't know that I have a lot to say about that, do you?
Cool. I'll probably pick it up for PS4 because, you know, the 360 and PS3, the PS3 had problems running it too, right?
Yeah, for 3 you
for
mean?
For 3, yes.
Yeah, my understanding is that there were some frame rate issues and stuff.
Yeah, so that might be the definitive version.
Yeah, I'll probably pick it up. If it's not out same day as the others, because, you know, maybe the PS4 just won't be out yet, then I'll probably pick it up on Wii U and then double dip for the PS4 version down the line.
Oh, you mean if they don't do a Rayman Legends and delay it for the PS4's release?
Well, I mean, we already know that it's coming out, like, the last week of October. So if PS4 isn't out by that point, then presumably the PS4 release will be a launch window release a couple weeks later, like what happened with the Wii U and Assassin's Creed 3.
Oh, I know. I'm just trying to make a point.
But you didn't make it super well.
Anyway, Suda51 is horny for PS4 possibilities.
Yeah, so Suda Goichi, Suda51, you know, one of the auteurs we often talk about here on Game Buoy, wrote in Famitsu, in his column in Famitsu, discussing the PlayStation 4 reveal event, and as translated by Edge, his column stated, "I think that in the future, cloud delivery will become totally commonplace. Social networking has certainly done that. To be able to play anywhere on any device with shared data, this will be an alluring new feature for games." He also described cloud saving is a standard, is also an evolution in itself. Further, thinking about the future of this stuff and then constructing and outputting something appealing is our job as game developers. Oh, designers. My bad. And from that challenge, we can take new strength, and that makes me horny.
So, yeah, we weren't just trying to be pervs.
No, he outright
said... He actually said that...
Makes him horny.
Makes him horny.
Which is cool. I mean, you do you, Suda Goichi. That I'm sure you'll make us very happy with whatever you produce.
Yeah, whatever his horniness results in for the PS4 is probably going to be dope as shit.
I wonder if when he was imagining Travis Touchdown, if he was like, I am horny for this character. Because, you know, we here on Game Buoy kind of were.
We were very horny for Travis Touchdown, and arguably still are. Anyway.
Yeah, so we're probably going to become the gayest podcast in games. Like, at the rate at which we
going to become? I thought we were already there.
At the rate at which we get gayer every episode, I think by this time next year, we will basically just be riding around on rainbows flying out of our butts with little, like, unicorn horns and pixie wings.
And we'll be like, it's the most beautiful rainbow ever! Do me on it! But not to each other, because that's not what happens on the pirate ship.
Yeah, y'all can't see me right now, but I'm side-eyeing
he looks really disgusted.
Moving on. The Dreamfall Chapters, the Longest Journey Kickstarter, concluded at $1.5 million.
That's great.
Yeah, that's superb. The pledge drive did end short of the $1.75 million goal of a mobile version for iOS and Android, as well as the $2 million goal for another game called The Longest Journey Home.
Oh, see, I didn't realize that that was one of the stretch goals. I thought that this was intended to be the conclusion of the Dreamfall saga.
I don't know. I kind of did too, but, you know, to be fair, I just gave them my money. I didn't even watch the video. So.
Oh, yeah.
It's all good in the hood. Let's see. We have here that news that the Ouya, which will be shipping in just a scant few weeks at this point,
yeah,
will not be shipping with online chat, friends lists, or achievements.
But then how am I supposed to show everyone that I can beat the game?
You could just, you know, talk to your friends and be like, LOL, I beat this game, dog.
Never mind.
I hate achievements so much.
No, I was obviously making reference to that Toys R Us ad or whatever.
No, I know you were.
You just didn't think it was funny, did you?
No, I effing hate achievements.
No, I know, and that's why I was making fun of the Toys R Us achievements, boy.
Oh, well, continue on then. I approve of mocking children, so keep on. Keep on keeping on.
Yeah. That kind of sucks, but whatever.
Yeah, to be honest, it's not a deal breaker, but I definitely would rather them, you know, include whatever's ready. Like, it's basically going to be a not online box, like, in terms of friends and stuff. Like, that sucks. I like having friends online.
Yeah, and I mean, there's not even a timeline is what's kind of more concerning. It's like, oh, just later in the year is what Joystick is telling us. So,
Well, you know, I have long said that the Ouya, if nothing else, will be the ideal, like, emulation and homebrew box.
Yeah, so that'll be cool.
And that'll be cool. You know, I have a ton of SNES games. I don't have any super legit way to connect my SNES to my HDTV without it looking like complete ass. So, you know, I feel pretty okay about emulating those things.
Yeah.
And I've said that on the show before. It should come as no surprise. I cherish my copy of Demon's Crest, and that's going to be the first thing I play on my Ouya, probably. So, I mean, not having online friends chat and stuff, it won't matter to me too much, but at the same time, it also feels jank as hell. Like, even on my 3DS at this point, like, I always have friends online.
Yeah.
I've gotten really used to sort of taking for granted having friends online on all of my platforms. So, it sucks. Ouya, folks, please get it together, but I'm still super excited to have my Ouya, so cool. You do you. Get it to my house in like 10 days. We'll be all good.
Yep. I'll let you take this next one because the last time I tried to take a Kingdom Hearts story, you basically bitched me out.
Yeah, well, I mean, Kingdom Hearts is kind of my life. Like, I live for that crap. Kingdom Hearts Key is gonna apparently be kind of like Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories, according to Silicon Era. Square Enix revealed details about Kingdom Hearts Key, and it appears to be a card battling game extremely similar to the original release of Chain of Memories for the Game Boy Advance. So, Kingdom Hearts Key is going to be a free-to-play game with extra items available if you purchase the premium version.
I have to say, I'm looking at these screenshots on Silicon Era, and even though, yes, it's kind of stylized, I mean, it looks pretty cute.
Yeah, well, it's using that same stylization as a Theater Rhythm.
That's what I was going to say. It looks
although,
a lot like
Theater Rhythm. Although, you know, actually, we need to take a step back further because that style of design, in terms of the Square Enix properties, was initially utilized by the Kingdom Hearts, like, social avatar mobile phone app that was launched with Coded originally in Japan, the original mobile phone version of Coded, not Recoded, which was the DS port.
Right, right. So it's kind of come full circle then with that art style.
Yeah, yeah.
That looks cute. I mean, I guess I just think of like what browser games used to be, and I'm like, oh, you know, even though this probably doesn't require a lot of power to like run those graphics or whatever, you know.
Yeah, but it looks like an actual-ish game, so that's cool. Yeah.
Cute.
Keeping with the trend, I'll let you take this next one, because that's sort of your wheelhouse.
So, we talked about how The Legend of Zelda Oracle of Ages and The Legend of Zelda Oracle of Seasons, or as I like to call them, the Biforce series, are coming to Virtual Console on the 3DS.
Why don't you explain why you call them the Biforce series?
The Oracle games were originally supposed to be a series of three games, but the third one, and I honestly feel like a bad Zelda fan because I can't remember what the third one's theme was supposed to be. Was it supposed to be...
I couldn't tell you.
Oracle of Ages has to do with time. Oracle of Seasons has to do with seasons. And I honestly...
Well, one was just a straight remake of the first one. Is that the one that you're forgetting?
One of the Oracle games was supposed to be a remake of Zelda 1?
Yeah. There was screenshots in Nintendo Power or something of that Dungeon 1 dragon thing.
Oh, wow, okay. See, that kind of has escaped me over the years, but anyways, it was supposed to be called the Triforce series because there was going to be three games. And then, unfortunately, that third game did not end up making it out, so it was just the two games, the Oracle games as we know them. And I like to call it the Biforce series because... You know, in reference to its origins as the Triforce series. It is not because of bisexual guys or whatever. Or gals. Anyway, that was way more of an explanation than we needed. We already talked about how they are coming to North America and Europe. And they are planning, according to Eiji Aonuma... Did I mess up that name?
Aonuma? Just look at the vowels and sound them out. Aonuma.
Aonuma-san. He actually posted on the Miiverse community, said that he said, our plan is to release these two games in other territories sometime before summer. So that's cool.
Yeah.
And the link system will be intact because it was, like, password-based, so... The link system, for those who don't know, allowed you to access content in the other game based on, you know, what you did in the one game. The Oracle games were pretty cool. Check them out if you never did, if you wrote them off.
So I just read up on this, and I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's okay.
So they actually never discussed what the third game in the Triforce series was. But the Triforce series sprung out of them designing a remake and then sort of feeling like maybe instead of doing a remake, we should just do an original game.
Okay.
And they were like, oh, well, since we were creating a pipeline to do multiple games, let's just do multiple games.
Yeah, I feel like that they had announced a title for the third game.
Well, the theme was going to be, initially, was going to be power, wisdom, and courage. And then it shifted to just being... time and whatever.
And seasons,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, the more you know. It was going to be called The Mystical Seed of Courage, apparently.
Yes, yes. That's right. That sounds very familiar.
I hate that I just spent that much time in my life reading about Zelda. Ugh.
Oh, whatever. So...
I could have been doing something worthwhile with that time.
In other 3DS news...
Donkey Kong Country Returns 3D is set for a May release.
Yay!
Both Europe and the US will be getting the game on May 24th. So that's actually just, like, 2 months from now.
That's pretty exciting. I didn't play the original, and as we talked about previously, this sounds like it will be the definitive version, so...
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. And also on the Silicon Era article, there's a picture of Gorilla's playing what looks like, I can't tell at this angle if it's a 3DS.
I believe that's a DSi XL.
Okay, yeah, but is that shopped?
I don't think so, no.
Wow.
Monkeys are rad, dog.
So when you look at this article that we'll link on GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org.
Let us know if you think that it's shopped. It's Donkey Kong, the Donkey Kong Country 3D May release article.
You're not going to segue?
Oh, I thought that you would want to talk about the next one because it's near and dear to both of our hearts, but particularly you.
That's an appropriate segue. So, I don't really have a lot to say exactly, but the last episode of Retronauts went up on the 15th. We're going to link to it on GameBuie.org, but mostly I just really wanted to put it out there that, you know, as we discussed last week, this show that you're listening to right now, GameBuie, would not exist if not for Retronauts. So I wholeheartedly recommend that you go give that a listen.
And I just have to say, I love the little animated GIF that they have on there of... that was Super Mario World, right? The ending?
Yep.
I was going to say that. I don't think... of course that wouldn't be Yoshi's Island. I'm dumb.
Continue, though.
Although there are baby Yoshis there.
Continue, though.
So, one thing that I wanted to also mention is that Jeremy Parrish on his Twitter mentioned that the 1UP servers will remain online indefinitely, and that if Ziff Davis plans to change that he'll let us all know. So that makes me very happy that although there won't be new content coming to 1UP and, you know, the other sites that unfortunately got shuttered.
And all of their incredible podcasts.
Yeah, yeah. That, you know, this content will be available online. So,
I don't think I can overstate how much I feel 1UP contributed to gaming podcasts. So,
yeah, and gaming journalism, obviously, as a whole. So, we and here at GameBuie Studios are saluting the folks over at 1UP, and I kind of wanted to take this one, but you can take it.
So, I'm super excited because on March 24th, the same day as Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Gates to Infinity, the U.S. is going to be getting the super cute Pikachu Nintendo 3DS XL.
You might remember us talking about this on GameBuie because it looks like the Pikachu has nipples.
Yeah, it's a little unfortunate that the 3D cameras that Pikachu has, they totally look kind of nippy. So, but yeah. It's super cute. I'm gonna buy it for sure.
Oh, so this is gonna be your dive into the XL?
And any of you out there that are listening to this while it's still contemporaneous, the sale ad that week for Target says that they're gonna have it for $40 off.
Oh wow!
So I definitely recommend if you're looking for an entry point into the XL world and you like cute things, this is probably the best way you're gonna do it. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna take advantage of that for sure.
Cool. I'm a little surprised you didn't jump on the Fire Emblem one, but
it's not an XL.
Oh, that's right.
I wanted it. It's super sexy, but it's not an XL, and I kind of want an XL. So.
Yeah, I like my XL a lot. So, yeah, if you want Pikachu nipples, and I'm sorry, like we've said before, if you look at this picture, you will never be able to unsee the nipples.
But yeah, it's true. I really have been making a concerted effort to try and sexualize cartoony things less, and to definitely talk about women's anatomy less. In, you know, sort of a flippant way.
Wait, why are nipples just specifically women's anatomy?
Because that's exactly what I'm talking about. They're not, but I totally think of them that way, and that's awful.
Oh, okay. I mean,
it's awful.
Well, to be fair, men's nipples don't really serve a function.
That's not true.
And with that, I think it's a good time for us to move on to
news.
Oh my god, news. Once again, we have a shit ton of news.
Yeah, seriously.
It's a busy month. So, according to CEO of Crytek, Seyvat Yerli, I'm probably butchering that.
I'm happy that you took that, because I was really, really afraid to say that name.
He's probably sexy, so whatever. Or if not, it's all good.
Please continue.
According to him, Crysis 3 was up and running on the Wii U and very close to launching. So,
But there was a lack of business support between Nintendo and EA on that.
Yeah.
Since they, as a company, cannot launch on the Wii U themselves without EA, Crysis 3 on Wii U is dead.
That's sad.
I just want to say, EA, F you.
EA, F you.
Yes. I, you know, this sucks. Everyone out there in Internet Radio Land knows that I love the Wii U. I mean, you know, the 8 people that listen to this show anyway. I'm really sad to see that, you know, teams that are excited to do work on the Wii U are, like, getting projects nearly to finish and then being told by EA, for example, like, oh, let's not release that. So, yeah.
Super janky, yeah.
I'm pretty bummed. I think it's a dire sign for the current state of the Wii U. Although it's Nintendo, I will never count them out, because even if they were to get no more third-party support, which is obviously not going to happen, like, I'd still be super excited for the Mario Galaxy successor and what have you.
Of course.
But I'm bummed to hear this. I think it really sucks, and, you know, I mean, thank you, Crytek folks, for talking to us and letting us know this, at least.
Yep. So, next on our news platter, even though the Mass Effect game franchise more or less has wrapped up, although, you know, there might be something similar in the future.
Not might. I mean, they've openly discussed that they're working on a fourth game. It's just going to be the start of a new series.
Yeah, well,
but it's going to be a Mass Effect game, just not Shepard.
Oh, see, now I thought it was even going to be called something different.
No, they've openly discussed that they're doing a fourth Mass Effect game. It's just going to be, like, a different setting and stuff. Like, it might be at a different time or something.
Oh, see, now I thought they were going to call it something else. But anyway, for those who are feeling sad and feeling a lack of Mass Effect in their life.
And after that great Citadel DLC, who isn't wanting more, I mean?
Dark Horse Comics is going to be putting out another miniseries of a Mass Effect comic book called Mass Effect Foundation.
Yeah, they announced this at the Emerald City Comic Con, and Mac Walters, who obviously you're probably familiar with as the writer of Mass Effect 2 and 3, as well as several of the other, you know, novels and comic series, confirmed that the series is currently planned for 12 issues.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I'll definitely read it. I have never read any of the Mass Effect novels, but I've read all of the comics, so.
Excellent.
In sort of sad-ish news, Tecmo Koei Canada will close at the end of March, according to a company official speaking with the Financial Post.
Oh, that's sad.
If you've played games such as My Monster Rancher, Samurai Cats...
Is that related to Samurai Fatal Pizza Cats?
No, it's not.
Oh.
Fatal Inertia or Fatal Inertia EX, then you're familiar with this studio's work. Otherwise, less so. So, it's sad to hear that you guys are closing, but... I'm not familiar with your output at all, so I'm really just sad at the idea of people losing jobs.
Yeah, that's what it boils down to for me as well.
In better news, Sega is getting their hands in on the iOS Endless Runner fad.
Trend, yeah.
Trad.
It's gruel.
So gruel. Whatever, I haven't had coffee yet today. So, they're doing a mascot-based Endless Runner, obviously based on Sonic. Sonic Dash is out now. I have it, and it's not awful. It's actually really pretty, and it feels like a Sonic Endless Runner game. Your mileage may vary, of course, but I thought it was worth the buck or whatever I paid for it.
Now, see, I didn't realize that the studio, Hardlight Studio, they had put out a game called Sonic Jump.
Yeah, that's like Doodle Jump, but with Sonic.
Which I figured was based on the name. So I didn't even realize that they had already made a previous entry into the iOS marketplace. So
I was specifically talking about, because like Endless Runners right now are sort of like mascot platformers in the 90s. Like everyone's doing these awful Endless Runners, and the only two really good ones that I've played were the Rayman one and now the Sonic one.
Well, way to go, Ubisoft. I can never say it right now.
Whatever.
And Sega. Well, by way of Hard Light
Studio.
Did
you just say Sega as Sega?
Not intentionally.
Oh. GDI. You want to take this next one?
So, Lost Planet 3 will be coming to North America on June 25th, and Europe 3 days later.
Oh, cool. I liked the second Lost Planet a lot. So I'll probably check this out. It looks a little jank, but
yeah,
I like the second one a lot. So we'll see.
You know, maybe if it does well, Capcom can use the money to do other stuff,
like start a Mega Man game and then cancel
right?
it.
Frown.
In somewhat big news, not really big to anyone that isn't listening to Game Buoy, but you are listening to Game Buoy, so you probably care. Grasshopper and Level 5's collaborative effort Liberation Maiden, which you might be familiar as one of the Guild Zero One games. We've talked about that these quite a bit here on Game Buoy, has released on iOS.
Yep, so those horny folks over at Grasshopper and the
Suda Goichi
and the talented peeps over at Level 5. Well, mostly talented peeps. We won't really talk about White Knight Chronicles.
I literally don't know where you're going with this.
I'm saying that Level 5 puts out good games, but that White Knight Chronicles is pretty universally panned.
Okay, cool. Yeah, obviously, if you listen to Game Buoy, you know that these games also came out in North America as 3DS eShop downloads. If you haven't played Liberation Maiden yet, I would say check it out. I think it's pretty neat. As long as you like, you know, flying around in spaceships and shooting things. If that's not your wheelhouse, then get the hell out of this game, not this podcast.
Yeah. Please don't get the hell out of our podcast.
Yeah, right? We have like 8 listeners. We would suffer. Think of our numbers.
I'm
being Kotaku. As soon as the word think of our numbers comes out of my mouth. I feel like this next story needs to run as like...
Yes.
Game featuring Lady Gaga dies.
What? Oh, you're still being Kotaku, I see.
Exactly.
Cute.
Dance Central's DLC is coming to an end.
Yeah, as you kind of mentioned at the beginning of the episode. And I just have to say, this is over on Destructoid, and the picture that they chose just looks like it would be like an awkward Facebook picture that, you know, someone took and posted and tagged of you. Like, oh, here, this is Larissa at a party dancing. And she's like, why did you put that picture of me up? It looks super awk.
It does, though. You're actually really right. Like, who would post? No one would post that picture of themselves unless you had, like, no sense of self.
Yeah. So, you know... We know that Harmonix has – well, we don't know what Harmonix has planned, but we know that they're working on some probably kick-ass things. But, you know, it's just sad to see these DLC releases coming to a close.
Yeah. So, sorry to see you go, Dance Central. We're going to pour out a 40 for you. I like Dance Central a lot.
I'm really sure that we will see – and they made a specific point of saying for the near future. So I'm sure that we will be seeing more Dance Central, honestly.
To me, my guess is that we'll see Dance Central rebooted on the next Xbox platform.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that they're ending DLC because there won't be any backwards or forwards compatibility.
We could hope for the same for Rock Band, but I think that
I think the plastic instrument genre is dead for the foreseeable future.
I think it is too.
Though, let me say this, I'm gonna cast this thought out on the interwebs, and you know, if it ever comes to fruition, I'll be deeply pleased. If Activision took the new console generation launch as like the time to relaunch Guitar Hero and scale things back from where they got, because like I love metal more than most, but that series got a little bit up its own ass and a little bit too like, let's do cartoony metal rock.
That's true.
And if they just stepped it back a little bit and were a little more respectful of the music, and I think that they could probably do a, you know, just respectable little music game of Guitar Hero and revitalize the franchise and the genre in the long term.
I think so.
By just doing a nice, minimal, just like game and guitar bundle for the next gen consoles.
I think that's what it would need. But of
and
course,
I love Rock Band's DLC, but like take away the DLC focus and just do a single title release that sort of revitalizes things and gets people to sort of think like, hey, remember how much fun we had with Guitar Hero? Well, it's like, it's simple like that again. Let's give it another go.
But then it might get bloated again. But
oh,
anyways,
it'll almost
this
certainly
is,
get bloated
anyways,
again.
Anyways, this
it's
is
Activision.
Not our... We specifically said we weren't going to turn this into a rhythm gaming episode, so...
Yeah, right.
More on that in the somewhat foreseeable future from GameBuie.
Next up, in a surprise announcement, Drakengard 3 has been confirmed to be coming from the original Drakengard team, which is exciting to me, of course, because Cavia developed that for Square Enix. If you're wondering what the heck I'm talking about, you've either never played Drakengard, or you might be familiar with the game by its Japanese release name, Drag on Dragoon.
I had no idea Drakengard was called Drag on Dragoon.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people who worked on this game also worked on Nier, which was one of my favorite JRPGs of this generation. And the Drakengard 3 is absolutely going to be a continuation of the story from the first two games. So,
cool.
It's awesome.
That's great news.
I expect you're going to want to take this next
yes.
one.
I'm going to say it in five words, although one of those words is you, as in Wii U. Pokemon Rumble U is Pokelanders.
Okay, but now why don't you give context of that for people who don't know what you're talking about?
So, Pokemon Rumble U, which we talked about previously, so this is in some ways a slight follow-up, but it's kind of a big deal because it's using the Wii U's NFC technology, near-field communication, with a line of physical Pokemon toys that can appear in-game.
That are hella cute.
They are hella cute. Some people say that they look like super, like, polygon-ish, but I think they look adorable.
Nah, dude, just Porygon.
Ah!
Continue.
So, yeah, as in Skylanders or the upcoming Disney Infinity, I mean, it's... I'm not super surprised, honestly. I knew that Pokemon probably would take this route anyway.
I think we're all expecting it to happen either with this or with cards. In fact, I think we may have discussed that on the show.
Yeah, but it's happening... And I'm going to get them. So between
are you
going to
get them all?
I don't know, but I saw a really cute Bulbasaur, so I might have to start saving my money. Between that and Disney Infinity, watch out, wallet.
I feel bad for your wallet, dude.
And in related news, Kotaku showed us the first look at some of the Pokemon Rumble U figures. The ones they showed were Bulbasaur, Pikachu, of course, Torchic, Piplup, Lucario, and Victini.
Man, you just reminded me of a guy I went to high school with who called Pikachu Pikachu.
Who would do that?
It was awful.
It's like, I understand if you don't even know how to pronounce Japanese, like me with Al Numa-san. But... I mean, Pikachu is just such a cultural icon that how do you not know that it's Pikachu?
To be fair, when I was in high school and knew this guy, Pokemon wasn't quite the thing that it is now.
Oh, that's right, because you're like 50 years old.
Rude. But why would you even say that? Ah, you're awful. Moving on. Dating Sim Sentimental Graffiti leads a gigantic list, well, you know, compared to the norm, of aww, PS1 imports this week. In a really, really awesome and weird twist, Gung Ho has released on the PSN Network, the PlayStation Network this week.
The PlayStation Network?
Right, DC Comics, dude. Detective Comics.
Yeah.
Gung Ho is releasing a cavalcade of PS1 imports on PSN Network. Of games that have never been brought to the US before, and as with all of the PS1 imports, they are completely untranslated for the English-speaking world. This would not in and of itself be news exactly, except several of these are like dating sims and JRPGs and strategy games with like just tons of text. Like, most of these games are completely unplayable without a functioning knowledge of Japanese. Of course, we're looking at Favorite Deer and Ken no Monogatari, First Queen 4, Mahjong Uranai, Fortuna, Tukino, Megami Tachi, Motorhead, High Velocity Entertainment.
Not related to the band Motorhead, I'm
unfortunately
assuming.
Unfortunately not related to the band
sorry,
Motorhead.
Sorry, Lemmy.
Lemmy don't need you to say sorry. He's better than that. Rung Rung, Oz no Mahou Tsukai, Sentimental Graffiti, and Trump Shiyoyo.
Fukokuban. I don't know why that was so funny to me.
So,
The thing that's interesting to me about this is that they recognize that there are people who... Well, I guess they could also figure that there are, like, Japanese-Americans who... obviously know how to read Japanese, but I get the feeling that they understand that there are people like you who taught themselves Japanese to learn, or not to learn, but to be able to play Japanese import games and watch anime unsubbed.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting, of course, because I see a lot of people in comments threads on all of the blogs and what have you. I see a lot of people complaining, like, how come there's no translation? This is awful. I'm not going to buy this. Vote with your dollars. Don't buy this. It's like, yeah, the thing is, these games, you know, decades old at this point, it costs a lot of money to translate games. Like, it's not just a matter of translating the dialogue. Like, there's all kinds of, like, coding issues and quality assurance issues and, you know, licensing and trademarked content. So, like, it's super expensive to translate a game, even for just digital release. And a lot of these games, like Sentimental Graffiti, they might make a profit off of just releasing it here for people who think, oh, Sentimental Graffiti, that's like a landmark dating sim. Even though I don't understand Japanese, I kind of want to see it. If they put in bank, like straight bank, to translate this game... It's not super likely that it would sell enough to really recoup its costs. So, you know, if it appeals to you, cool. Maybe get a FAQ online and, you know, a translation sheet of frequently used terms and go for it. Get a walkthrough or something. I'm happy that this is even an option.
Yeah, this sounds like something this sounds like something that would be definitely up your alley.
Yeah, definitely.
This is made for gamers like you.
I'll buy several of these. It'll be
excellent.
Cool. I do, fortunately, I mean, I have a workable knowledge of Japanese, so...
Yeah, you know...
I'm not exactly, like, I guess maybe that's part of why it's difficult for me to see why people are so upset about this, because to me this is only a good thing. But I guess maybe if you've always been holding out hope that we would get a translated version of Sentimental Graffiti, I guess this is the true sign that ship has sailed, but... Again, for me, it's like, cool, yeah. I'm not going to have to bust out my old modded PlayStation to play an import disc. Like, this is cool.
Yeah. And it was funny because it kind of made me think of how when we were talking about mature content in gaming, we kind of briefly touched on dating sims, although, like, more focused on the erotic part. But so it's kind of cool to see some of those. In some, I guess you could say, bittersweet news, Ron Gilbert is parting ways with Double Fine Productions. Ron Gilbert, of course, was the creator of Monkey Island and the more recent release, The Cave, which I've heard great things about. I haven't had a chance to play it yet.
Yeah, it's cool. I liked it. I have it on Wii U.
And he's still going to keep making games, and it sounds like it was, you know, an amicable split. But, you know, he's just kind of going to do his own thing. He's going to be working on an iOS side project right now, or he is working on it right now. Called Scurvy Scalawags and the Voyage to Discover the Ultimate Sea Shanty, a musical match 3 pirate RPG.
So part of me thinks he's trolling when he said that, but if he's not, I'm gonna buy that day one.
Yeah, I mean, hello. Pirate RPG, do you need to say anything else? The thing that's kind of like, what, for me, is that he's gonna be holding a keynote at PAX Australia. I didn't know PAX Australia was a thing. I feel a little ignorant now.
Yeah, I think I heard that, but I still felt ignorant, too, because I didn't realize that it was, like, a thing.
I mean, it's like, obviously, we have PAX Prime and PAX East, but PAX Australia? Well, I mean, cool. Good for you, Australia. And, you know, best of luck to Ron Gilbert, and hopefully Scurvy Scalawags is actually coming out. I mean, I don't see why he would be trolling. Except that
because it would be a great troll.
The title is kind of cray-cray, but it sounds amazing, honestly.
Moving on, because we still have a lot of ground to cover.
Yep, let's move it to
The full F-Zero AX arcade game has been discovered on the F-Zero GX GameCube disc.
Say what?
As you may recall, Sega had worked on the F-Zero arcade game in collaboration with Nintendo some number of years ago, 2003. Thank you, Silicon Era.
10 years ago.
Oh, gosh, that makes me feel super old. I remember when the Sunnyvale Golfland got an arcade unit of this, and everyone was just like, oh, my God, we have to go play it.
Amazing.
Anyway, apparently, back in November, a group of F-Zero enthusiasts discovered that the GameCube disc for F-Zero GX, which was the GameCube component of the that era of F-Zero, obviously, AX is arcade, GX is GameCube, whatever. Apparently, using action replay codes, you can access the entire arcade game on the GameCube disc.
Wow.
So, that's really exciting. If you have F-Zero GX, you should probably look into getting an action replay and checking this out, because there were exclusive tracks in the arcade version that have never been released at home.
It's just interesting that, you know, this seems to hint that they intended it to be available and then decided at the last minute to lock it.
Well, I don't necessarily think that that's the case. But,
oh, really?
But it is worth mentioning that you can unlock a handful of tracks from the arcade version in...
And maybe the workaround for that
GameCube
code-wise was
so
to...
That is exactly what I think is
just
more
have
likely
whole,
to have happened.
Whole
just drop that whole set of data on there, whatever. It's, you know, optical discs. It's not like we're hurting for space.
Huh.
And then, oh, well, we're only going to use this content. But whatever, the rest is there. Let's just leave it. And now you can play it at home, so I'm super excited.
Cool, cool, cool.
I actually haven't done this yet, because while I do have F-Zero GX, I do not have an action replay, and that is going to be something I go on a quest to find this week.
So, kind of going back to the mature content thread, the ESRB is changing how mature-rated video games are going to be marketed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so what they're going to be doing is that they will have a green slate at the beginning of trailers, and what the big point here is that it's not going to be age-gated, so these trailers are going to be kind of more widely available. It's just going to say, you know, this content is rated M for mature, or expected to be rated M for mature, anticipated. So, you know, that's good news, because, you know, we've talked about how, you know, the issue of rated M for mature games can kind of, you know, impact things.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that's worth mentioning, it sounds like from my reading this, is that it won't just be that all trailers for M for mature games are no longer going to be age-gated. But currently, if you have a trailer for an M for Mature game, it has to be age-gated. And now you'll be able to have your trailer reviewed and approved for general audiences, which will remove the requirement for an age gate.
Okay,
It'll be possible to do a general audiences GTA 5 trailer. In fact, we'll probably see that for GTA 5.
Yes. And, you know, I think that's a good thing.
Well, it'll definitely be easier to advertise games this way. And, you know, ultimately, being able to advertise games is a good thing. So, you know, this is good. I think we may have talked a little bit about how heavy-handed the ESRB can be. So, obviously, anything that gives publishers a little more leeway in selling their wares is going to be good.
One other point of note. Sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt you. The one other point to note is that there are no changes planned for adult-only games. Which,
no, of course not.
That which is not surprising, but...
A surprise to no one. As we discussed a few months ago now, there are not very many adults-only games that even exist, unfortunately.
Although if Game Buoy was a video game, it would probably be adults-only.
Oh gosh, no way. We've never talked about stuff I can't say, because then we'd be talking about it.
Do I need to remind you that you were talking about the use for male nipples?
No, I didn't. I said that they had one. That's not even M for mature.
So, level 5 is bringing the Guild Zero 2 games, Bugs vs. Tanks, and the Starship Damrey here.
Yeah, I mean, except maybe not, but maybe.
Yeah, Silicon Era has... I called them Silicon Era, I just pulled a U.
Okay, but continue on.
It has a question mark in the headline, so...
So the thing is, these games have had trademarks spotted as having been filed by Level 5 in the United States. If you recall, this is how we first got word of the original Guild Zero 1 games coming to the U.S.
Yep.
Obviously, the current speculation now is that Bugs vs. Tanks and the Starship Damrey will be coming to the U.S., probably as individual downloads on 3DS, from the original Guild Zero 2 package. There isn't yet any word on the third and final game in Guild Zero 2. Monsters come out on Friday. Hopefully we do hear something on that, as, you know, I like that name. I'd be inclined to buy it.
Like Monsters Coming Out of the Closet?
I don't know, maybe.
Hey, we're here, we're queer, and we're scary. Okay, you take this next one, it's a Kingdom Hearts story.
Spoilers right now. If you care about the contents of Kingdom Hearts HD 2.5, then don't listen to this. Okay, good. So, Kingdom Hearts HD 1.5 Remix came out this past week in Japan. Obviously... Many people have already rushed to the end of all of the games on the disc.
Including you?
No, I'm still waiting on my copy.
Frown.
I picked the slow shipping because it was cheaper, and I already super regret it. So, apparently, during the credits, and I have viewed these credits on YouTube to confirm, they show, like, HD-ified cutscenes from Kingdom Hearts Birth by Sleep, Kingdom Hearts Recoded, and Kingdom Hearts 2. So, easy bettin' money is that Kingdom Hearts HD 2.5 Remix is going to have Kingdom Hearts 2 Birth by Sleep and Coded. Probably Coded will be a movie only, much as we saw 358 over 2 days as a video-only in the current 1.5 HD remix set. Mm. So that's super exciting. Birth by Sleep is one of the best games I've ever played.
KermitFlail.gif. 2
is super good. So, yeah. Obviously, we would expect these to be the final mix release versions of these games, and none of those have come to the U.S., so I would love to see the new content.
Woot!
You want to take this next
one?
Yeah,
I do. Saints Row 4 gets pimped in August 20th. That's direct from Joystick. Of course, this is with new publisher Deep Silver.
Whom you might recall from the naked zombie torso scandal of a scant few weeks ago.
Yep. And, you know, there was going to be Saints Row 3 Enter the Dominatrix standalone expansion. They that has been canceled, but that's not just what Saints Row 4 is. Yeah, some of the elements will be included in that, but it will still be a new game. It's going to be for PC and current-gen consoles, which does not include Wii U. So, Boo. So, you know,
So, to me, the most exciting thing about the trailer that followed this announcement was, of course, the Saints all getting hell of superpowers. Flying around. One scene there was a dangly penis. I thought that you would be super into that. I'm really excited for this game. I liked Saints Row 3 a lot. And, you know, they are going to be doing a director's cut of the Enter the Dominatrix DLC as originally envisioned, but for Saints Row 4, which appears to be taking place in the same city as Saints Row 3. I sort of get the feeling that Deep Silver is eager to recoup the costs they spent at auction buying the Saints Row property and this game. But, you know, for me, as long as the game is of high quality and the new gameplay elements feel good,
yep, I don't I'm mind here at for all. That.
I am here for that.
You know what else that we're both here for, listeners?
What's that?
Well, I mean, you already know. I'm saying our listeners.
That was your segue.
Guess what, listeners? Civilization 5 has a new expansion pack coming this summer called Brave New World.
Civilization.
So the folks over at Firaxis and 2K Games are bringing us some more Civ 5 action. And I, for one, cannot wait because I love me some Civ 5.
Yeah, I'm really excited because this game is going to be largely focused on, like, diplomacy.
Trade routes.
And these are things that I really felt like Civ 5 was missing from earlier Civ games. So I'm really excited about this.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there's going to be some changes to cultural gameplay during the industrial and modern era. So it really sounds like it's going to really, really enrich our Civ 5 experience. And I am horny for that to come out.
Yeah, you weren't here for Civ 4. So this is something that's happened to past Civs where the game changes pretty rapidly during its release. So I'm really
rapidly
excited.
Rapidly or radically? Or well, both?
Both.
Okay.
So I'm really excited for you to see how the game changes.
Yeah, I am excited because I think Gods and Kings is great.
Next up, I have been hoping against hope for the last 10 years that an announcement like this was going to come through. Dungeons and Dragons, Shadow over Mystara, and Tower of Doom are coming to PS3 and Xbox 360.
No way!
We have long known that Capcom was going to be making a couple of new announcements at PAX East later this month. Apparently, someone slipped the word a little early and confirmed that we're getting the Dungeons & Dragons Shadow over Mystara and Dungeons & Dragons Tower of Doom action RPG arcade games, beat-em-up games, released to the digital download services. I, again, have been a fan of these games since they originally released to the arcades. I do have the somewhat pricey Saturn import release of these two games, but aside from that Saturn release, and let's be real, most people are not in the habit of importing old Saturn games, these games have not really received any other home console release, nor any worldwide home console release at all. So this is some really exciting stuff.
That's super rad.
Something else I'm really excited about and have been hoping against hope for is that the Neverhood creators, the Neverhood, are planning a new clay adventure game for PC and Mac. I don't really know too much more about the game yet, but I am a huge fan of the previous games that these guys have done. So I don't really have much more to say than that, but I'm really excited to hear that this is a thing.
You know what else I can't believe is a thing?
What's that? That it's butter? You can't believe it's butter?
Can't believe it's not butter. I can't believe that Resident Evil 6 x Left 4 Dead 2 crossover from Capcom and Valve is a thing that's coming.
Okay, why don't you tell me a little bit more about this?
It's a crossover between Resident Evil 6 and Left 4 Dead 2 that Capcom and Valve are putting out. And the cool thing is that if you are a fan of either game, you'll be able to access and play it. So, you know, if you're a fan of L4-D2 or RE6, you'll be able to...
Okay, yeah, so each respective game is going to have, like, crossover of characters and enemies from the other game. So, for example, enemies from Resident Evil 6 will be invading the PC version of Left 4 Dead 2, while the survivors from Left 4 Dead 2 will be appearing in the PC version of Resident Evil 6 in the Mercenaries mode.
Thank you. I was trying to figure out a way to explain that, and the way you explained it made it really obvious that I should have been able to say it that way.
I really don't know what you're talking about. But we do finally have only one new story left.
Why don't you take this one?
So, you know, we here on Game Buoy have talked a couple times about Cyberpunk 2077 now. This is, of course, CD Projekt Red's futuristic RPG adaptation of the Cyberpunk pen and paper game. And basically, they're going to be adding multiplayer features. We don't yet know exactly what that means. There has been some discussion as to whether that means, like, full-on, straight-up multiplayer gameplay, or more like sort of crossover elements that you sometimes see in these games, like what we're hearing we may be seeing from games like Watch Dogs, where what happens in someone else's game has an impact on yours, but not necessarily simultaneous multiplayer. So the reason why we wanted to frame this story last, of course, is that this ties into sort of exactly what we're talking about this week. That is to say that we've finally reached our discussion point. Today we're discussing the always-on paradigm. And this ties into Cyberpunk 2077 because the whole adding multiplayer elements is sort of the exact reason why this always-on issue has become such an issue with regard to SimCity, which has obviously brought the always-on situation to everybody's attention.
Yep, there's no ignoring it.
So, we're going to talk a little bit about what always-on means. Then I want to talk a little bit about what we have seen happen in the always-on world. Diablo 3. And then we're going to talk about sort of the SimCity snafu. Before moving on to sort of overall what we have to say in closing. So to start off, we here at Game Buoy see three different reasons for a quote-unquote always-on connection required. The first, of course, is the DRM. This is typically thrown out as an accusation with some amount of venom from gamers. If you're unsure of what we're talking about, of course, I suggest you read up on Ubisoft's PC releases of the last few years, in particular, the Assassin's Creed 2 trilogy. That was, of course, an intentional mispronunciation of trilogy. If you got it, give yourself a gold star. If you don't know what always on as DRM means, it's basically the idea that this company is requiring you to maintain an open connection with them over the internet so that they can be sure that you're not playing a pirated game 100% of the time. This has been an issue in games that have released in the past, where it has definitely been done as DRM, and it has never gone well for any publisher. Why publishers continue to do it, I will never know. The second, of course, reason for an always-on requirement is design-motivated. The easiest example here, of course, is a massively multiplayer online game. It's easy, of course, to say that Blizzard makes World of Warcraft online only because they want your subscription dollars every month, but let's be real, that game, as designed, it's a multiplayer game. It literally would not work as a single-player game. So, to us here at Game Buoy, that sort of always on as a negative. I can't fault an online game for being online personally. Like, yeah. If you're an online game that requires always online, but it's because you are always doing things online, then to me, okay, cool. You know, that's design motivated. And I think it's fine. I personally would never call a multiplayer only game out for having always on. Like, to me, it's like, okay, well, if you don't want a multiplayer game, just steer away from that one.
Yeah, I mean, MMOs are designed for people all over the world to be able to play together. So it's like, obvo, you need internet for that.
And, you know, of course, I'm sure user opinion on whether that's acceptable or not is, you know, I'm sure that's a thing. I'm sure there are people who say that even MMOs should have single player modes. I'm sure there are people who feel that way. If you feel that way, by all means, I'd love to hear from you, but that's not the point of this episode. We're moving forward with the conceit that if you're an online-only game, because that's what your game design is, because you're designed to be an online-only, massively multiplayer game, for example, we're just going to move forward assuming that's okay. And, of course, there's the marketing-motivated always on connection requirement. It's hard to prove this, but, and for me, I feel like SimCity probably falls into this category personally. Marketing motivated always on connections would be a circumstance where you have to be always online so that you can see the ads that you're being fed while you're playing your game, and so that the publishers can be sure that you have a pipeline open to get that DLC that they want to sell you.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So now that we've discussed that a little bit, why don't we talk real quick, just so that we can let our listeners know where our personal opinions on these matters lie. Mr. Slagkick, what do you think about Ubisoft's exploits into the realm of always-on requirements?
You know, as far as business practices are as far as business practices are concerned, I always thought that the Ubisoft, I mean, I guess this is probably the popular opinion, I thought that the Ubisoft DRM always on requirement was kind of shady. The thing is, though, personally, my consoles are always online anyway, unless my, wireless cut out or whatever, but, so, I mean, I'm always online, and I don't pirate games, so, I mean, it didn't personally affect my experience, but as someone who's trying to think about, you know, I mean, obviously, even though I'm a pirate, I don't support game pirating, but, you know, the whole Ubisoft DRM thing was pretty controversial, and, I mean, I can understand why people were upset about it.
Yeah, it was pretty gross. I know people personally who had bought Assassin's Creed 2, whatever the first expansion was, though, Brotherhood, maybe?
Great game.
Who, you know, their internet went out while they were playing and they lost progress.
And that sucks.
Like, that sucks hell of much.
That never happened to me, but,
well, you know. Were you playing on PC?
No.
I think that the always-on requirement was for PC only, so that might be why you didn't have that problem.
Well, you know, then there's also the whole Uplay thing, which was kind of like, eh. Although, I guess...
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Uplay classically. I have noticed that they've been integrating Uplay elements into their console releases, and none of them have really been intrusive for me yet, so I don't really care.
I do have to say that the Uplay part itself, DRM issues aside, like, I was playing, I think it was Assassin's Creed Revelations.
Uh-huh.
The last in the 2 trilogy.
Uh-huh.
And I got achievements, and I got Uplay achievements, which might have been tied into Xbox achievements, I don't know. But I got points that, and I could unlock a reward. I could unlock a rewards in game, like a costume or something, which was pretty cool, but
yeah.
So I think Uplay in that regard kind of neat, but I also don't know why they couldn't just tie it into the trophies or achievements in general and have to frame it around this this whole Uplay thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's their prerogative for whatever reason. They must see value in having sort of their own platform for that. I don't get it, but, you know, I don't think that it really hurts. Uplay specifically, I don't really think hurts anything. If you disagree and you think Uplay hurts a lot of things, please let us know.
Yeah, and you know, as far as the PC Ubi gamers are concerned, I think one of the most significant dramas was with From Dust, where had lots of technical issues, frame rate issues, lots of bugs, and it just was really, really poorly ported. And you know, the DRM, they said they would remove it, but they never did.
Well, my understanding in late 2012, so you know, just like 6 months ago, was that they are finally saying goodbye to the always-on DRM. So I know that in terms of From Dust, for example, the always-on DRM has been patched out of that.
Oh,
that is a thing that has happened.
I don't personally follow that game super closely, so
I didn't care for it at all. But that's not really germane to this discussion. So, you know, that's a good thing. We sort of saw it had a lot of negative... Always On had a lot of negative impact on Ubi. Pretty much no one liked it. People were definitely negatively impacted by it. And now they've gotten to a point where they're like, yeah, we're not going to do this. Nobody likes it, and it's hurting us.
You know, I was just looking here. Rock, Paper, Shotgun did an interview with Ubisoft about that decision with the DRM piracy and the PC gaming. So we'll link to that on GameBuoy.org.
Excellent. So next up then, I think we need to talk about the Always On game that had the biggest issues of them all. If you guessed Diablo 3, you're right.
You get a gold star, give yourself a pat on the back, and take a cookie from the cookie jar.
You can tell that Slagkick is trying really hard to reward you all, and that's because the always-on circumstance with Diablo 3 was a giant cluster F. Of course, if you tried to play Diablo 3 on the day it came out,
Error 37,
you probably couldn't. Of course, I, more than most, am a little bit forgiving about Blizzard. I feel like we've probably talked about this on this show somewhere back in the archives when the game came out. So I just want to sort of go over this lightly. I do think it's valid that they made Diablo 3 a multiplayer-only game. I actually think that that's all right. I don't really have a problem with that. I never play Diablo 2 alone because when I'm alone and I want to play an RPG, I just go play a real RPG, typically. If I want an action RPG, I go play, you know, a good action RPG. But that having been said, it does make me sad that they removed any of the single-player options in support of multiplayer only. And, you know, then you look into all of this nastiness where they had the real money auction house. And, you know, a lot of us that wanted to have faith in Blizzard's design have had to sort of eat our hats because the game has unfortunately become a mess based almost solely on what you can buy from the auction house for your character. So I would call that almost a marketing motivated always on connection rather than strictly DRM. I don't really think that the point was to make sure that you're always playing online so that you're not pirating. Like, I don't think it had anything to do with with digital rights management and protecting their IP. I think it was to keep you online so that you always have the lore of that auction house and knowing that you can have a good weapon, you don't have to grind for it. Because they get money off that.
Yep.
So that gets a negative. If it had been purely more of like an MMO thing where, oh, this game's design fundamentally requires always on, I would be a lot more forgiving about it. As I said, that doesn't really bother me because I only play the game multiplayer anyway. But as it stands, it kind of sucks because it just seems like all of the really pessimistic people were absolutely right on this one. And I wanted to believe Blizzard was better.
Yeah, it was pretty disappointing.
Mr. Sidekick, do you have anything to say about Diablo 3 with regard to its always-on connection?
Again, aside from the Error 37 issues the first night, you know, and I guess my perspective on it is similar to probably a good deal of other Blizzard gamers. I got it as part of the World of Warcraft Annual Pass.
Oh, the free. Blood Pact.
The Blood Pact, yeah. So,
oh, my Blood Pact is probably up in the next month or two.
Oh, my Blood Pact's been up for months.
It might be time to finally cancel my World of Warcraft subscription.
Aww. But yeah.
I like World of Warcraft. The problem is, in Pandaria, I have a couple of characters getting ready to go to Pandaria, but I know that all I have waiting for me is dailies at the end of Pandaria, and I hate dailies more than anything.
Yeah, I'm kind of not really finding a purpose to play it either. But back to Diablo 3. You know, so it was a free game for me, and again, you know, I only intended to play it online. I didn't intend to use the real market auction house. Real money auction house. So, you know, I got what I paid for. Doesn't mean I got nothing out of it, but, you know, I played through on the, you know, first level of difficulty with Captain Spike and some other peeps, and I had a good time, and, you know, I got what I was looking for out of it, and so, personally, you know, always on didn't affect me, but looking in a broader perspective, as with the Ubisoft thing, it sucks, yeah.
It sucked?
The issues that we're talking about, yes, I think that they suck.
Delightful. All right, well, I guess those are sort of the two big cases. I was sort of racking my brain to talk about more historical cases, but it occurred to me that we're already pretty deep in this episode, and we still have a little ways to go.
We are rolling in the deep.
Okay, so now I just want to talk about SimCity a little bit. Sidekick, have you played SimCity yet?
Nope.
I have. If you're listening to this show, it's possible you listen to you read my Twitter. It's also possible that you don't. I'm not really super concerned about it either way. But I got SimCity as a gift. I tweeted about this. I figured, okay, well, it's a gift. I definitely should play it and form an opinion. It'll be good for this topic on the show. So I actually really like it. I want to say that because I feel like...
Yeah, I've heard when it works that it's super good.
Well, there's some caveats there, but I feel the need to state my opinion on the game as a game before we get into the nitty-gritty of some stuff that I feel is really just gross, disgusting, and awful. And that is to say that the game, as designed, not looking at any of the extraneous factors, I like it. I think it's good. I like it a lot. I think it was a really good way to refresh the IP and bring SimCity into, you know, 2013 in terms of design goals and design philosophies and what's considered acceptable in user interface in this day and age. That having been said, just real quick, looking at the timeline here, there's been a lot of trepidation, there's been a lot of negativity, there's been a lot of pessimism about SimCity's always-on connection requirement. Of course, I personally did not buy into these. I figured, okay, it's just going to have multiplayer elements that are baked into the game real deep. And I maintain, of course, that that would have been perfectly viable. I don't complain that other online-only multiplayer games are always online. I wouldn't have complained about this. But we've had EA for months talking about how the Glassbox engine sends a lot of data back to their servers, and then things are done on their servers in terms of processing that we couldn't do on our home machines, and that there's just no way for this game to be made offline, that it has to be online only. And that it has nothing really even to do with all of the network functions, which to me, again, like I said, the network functions, if they worked correctly, which I'm going to get into, they're nice, but they don't necessarily necessitate an always-on connection. So the timeline for this, it sort of starts off, you know, the game releases, and immediately EA servers are hammered. People are kicking the game up to cheetah speed and just transferring data way faster than EA expected. So their servers came crashing down. In order to get the servers back up, EA began stripping away gameplay features from the game. Like literally just turning off like trading and stuff between your city and your friend's cities within the same region. They just were straight turning things off, turning off leaderboards, turning off achievements, turning off search filters.
But then how can you show people that you're winning the game? No, that sucks, know, though.
EA, of course, promised that the removal of these things would in no way affect your core gameplay experience. I disagree. But even still, as this is going on, the game's losing features, people are finally starting to get online and play a little bit. But a lot of people were still very upset. They're starting to request refunds from places that they purchased the games. But EA sticks to its story. They stick to the story that these games have to stay always online, that all of these calculations are being done by servers on their end because Glassbox, blah, 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 blah. But they asked all of their affiliates and sort of marketing partners to stop promoting SimCity the game, because they're trying to get the number of people that are already online sort of in line, getting it working.
Yeah, and this joystick article that we're going to link on GameBuoy.org as part of the supplemental reading said it looks like now that it's back up, but for a while it looks like Amazon was not even selling digital copies of the game because of how
poorly... Yeah, that definitely happened. I was there.
Yeah, and it looks like I'm looking at the Amazon page right now, and it looks like you can download it at this point. But 1.5 stars, so yikes. So people are angry.
Well, then we have,
rightfully so,
a couple of days later, people are online asking the official SimCity supports over at Maxis, and, you know, asking sort of, can you make the game offline? Can you add an offline mode? Is there something you can do so that we can access the game we paid for and bought and play it even without all of the cool multiplayer stuff? And the official answer was, the entire game is designed for multiplayer. We simulate the entire region on our servers, so this is just not possible. That is, of course, a quote. And it remains, even to now, the official party line of the SimCity developers and publisher, that offline is impossible, taking out the multiplayer stuff is impossible, it's baked too deep into the game, which, of course, we here at GameBuoy support. Frankly, we do. If that were the case, I would support it. It's not necessarily a popular opinion, but I'm of the belief that, you know, some games are just not for everyone, and if you're not here for an always-on game, then, you know, skip it. There are other games. But the reason why this becomes really problematic, of course, is that as Rock, Paper, Shotgun runs, they had a Maxis insider tell them, in fact, that SimCity servers are not necessary. The servers are not handling any of the computations done to simulate the city that you're playing. They're just acting as regular servers doing some amount of computation to route messages of various types between both players and cities. They're also doing cloud storage of games, interfacing with Origin, but for the game itself, they're not doing anything. This is, of course, sort of a giant red flag that we have been lied to about all of everything involving SimCity's always online connection. From there, Kotaku, as well as Marcus Notch Person,
oh yeah,
from Minecraft
team,
both ran a series of tests and tweeted and posted about how they've been able to run the game without an internet connection for up to 20 minutes. Of course, if the game weren't actually being run locally, you wouldn't be able to play offline for 20 minutes. So, that's already, like, a big deal. Like, that's like, wow, that's crazy. And then the next step in the storyline from there, and unfortunately for the notes I put together for this show, I'm sorry, Slagkick, I did not include a link to the next step in this story accidentally, but modders have modded the game to be able to play offline by simply commenting out a single line in the code of the game.
What? And it works perfectly fine?
Yep. I mean, you don't get to do any of the cool multiplayer stuff, but of course not, because you're not online. But the game itself runs perfectly fine. Like, you can play indefinitely forever, just like normal.
Wow.
Without ever touching home base online. They also, and you know, there's been a lot of people complaining about the relatively small size of cities in SimCity, with the idea being that you would create multiple cities on a server with your friends, and that you'd all have multiple cities, and that all of your multiple cities would rely on all of the multiple cities of your friends. And it's all kind of cool, but the cities as them in themselves are all pretty small. My first city, I had completely full. Every space was utilized in some way. Obviously, it wasn't min-maxed, and there were improvements to be made, but I had every square utilized in my first city within, like, 3 hours.
Oh, wow.
Because they're really small. And, you know, I built a new city, and they were trading with each other, and it was actually pretty cool. I enjoyed creating the multi-city economy. But these hackers that hacked the game found that they were able to very easily open up larger cities as well that would let you build outside of the original constraints and still use that space as proper space in your game. So that is another big deal, because that indicates, of course, that the ability to have larger cities is purely by design, which in and of itself is, you know, that's okay, but the common speculation is that we're going to end up seeing DLC larger cities, since obviously the code is in place to allow that to happen really rather easily, if some random hackers can do it in, like, an afternoon.
So, yeah, yikes.
Of course, Maxis has promised a patch to come in the near future to resolve some of the really poor design choices that were made. So some of the stuff that we were previously led to believe was being run on the servers, calculations and what have you, involving traffic and stuff, and, like, there's this really awful design choice where basically all of your cars will always use the same roads, no matter how many other roads you build. So as soon as you've built a city, definitely 100% of the time, all of your traffic routes are just going to be completely plugged up, and anything that goes wrong in your city, police and fire departments and ambulances aren't going to be able to get to it, because you're always 100% of the time going to be in a traffic jam. So there's a patch coming to try and fix that, but it's pretty awful.
That sounds terrible.
And, like, y'all talked very specifically about simulating the lives of each of these people and making sure that shit like this didn't happen. So why is this happening? Of course, the obvious reason is none of that computation is being done. For whatever reason, Maxis / EA wants us always on. So really the question is, do they want us always on because they don't want people pirating their shitty game? Or do they want us always on because they want us to see ads and buy DLC as soon as it's available? Because there's clearly not a multiplayer-only reason for us to be always on, despite the fact that I do think the multiplayer stuff adds to the game. And while I refer to the game as shitty, I do actually like it, and will continue to play it a bit. I just think it's really unconscionable, in particular, to be lying to your entire fanbase and the people giving you $60 a hit for this game. Like, to straight out lie about what's being done with your internet connection.
This is a real shit show.
It's a complete shit show. Now, I have talked nonstop for the last, like, 10 minutes. Slagkick, I really need you to take a minute. Why don't you tell me what you think about this?
I mean, I just... Sadly, this discourages me from wanting to play it unless they get their shit together, which sucks because before I even knew what a shit show this was going to be, I was like, oh yeah, SimCity's coming out. Cool. There's a lot of coming out this month, you know, that, so I've kind of, it was on the back burner for me, but now I'm like, you know, even though I'm curious about it, and the always on wouldn't be an issue for me. Like I've said, I always have an internet connection going on, and, you know, I would love to play with friends. I just think it's really shitty that this is how, you know, that I think the line is shitty, and I mean, also just the fact with, like, all the bugs and stuff also influences it, but I mean, I think that's almost separate as far as the traffic bugs and stuff, but you know, I think it's shitty, and it's definitely discouraging me from picking it up because, you know, if I wanted to play offline, I couldn't. And, you know, the game is, I feel like the game, clearly there are workarounds because hackers, like you said, are able to do it in an afternoon. So why can't EA/Maxis just do that? Why can't they just do that? They could even be like, okay, we're not going to, like, track down the people who modded it and get them in trouble or anything. You know, we'll just give them permission. Like, well, you know, not permission. We'll give them credit for doing this. We'll issue a big old apology. It's just a mess, and, like, you know, clearly when it's shown that it's not required, and they're still being insistent.
Yeah, it's very.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Yeah,
in a way.
For those of you listening to this show not in America, Slykick is of course referencing the famous line delivered by the president while denying having received oral sex from a woman from whom he did in fact receive oral sex.
President Clinton, let's just get that clear. We're not talking about Obama.
Oh, did I just say the president?
You just said the president. The president from the for the majority of the 90s.
Yeah. Anyway, we're
history
not
history lesson
politics.
Is over.
You know, did you ever play the video game they made about Bill Clinton's cat?
What?
Socks the Cat Rocks the Hill. I'm not making that up, I swear to God.
That sounds horrible. Anyway, all I have to say is to Maxis and to EA is all y'all better get your shit together because, you know, this is a mess. And it's incorrigible.
Also, just so you know, Socks the Cat Rocks the Hill was apparently never released, but it was finished. It exists. There are alpha versions out there and video of it.
Socks the Cat Rocks the Hill was vaporware?
Well, it was a canceled game, but it was finished. So, I mean, kind of vaporware, but since you can, you know, in theory, it exists in the hands of private collectors, I can't really call it vaporware. It does exist. Maybe someday we'll get a ROM of it, and then we can just become Socks the Cat Rocks the Hill buoy.
No. Moving that's not going to happen.
Moving on. So, that's sort of the what's the what about SimCity to now. We've both, of course, stated our opinions on the game itself and these really
rather... sucks a big fat dick.
These really rather draconian deceptions that Maxis and EA have perpetrated. I'm curious, of course, what all you out there in internet radio land think. So it would behoove you to tweet us or message us on Facebook or even Google+ on the off chance you're on Google+.
Or tumble at us.
Okay, stop. I don't think tumbling at people is a thing. You can, of course, find all of our social links on GameBuoy.org.
We'll give those to you at the end of the episode. GameBuoy.org. Our
Stop
website.
Stop what you're doing. Stop! So let's close this up. I just realized we've been going a long time. I'm starting to get a little slappy. Overall, Slagkick, what do you think moving forward? What do you think we're going to see in terms of online, always on connections?
I think we're going to be seeing always on be a lot more prevalent. Although, you know, arguably, I don't know if we have the infrastructure in the United States to support. And then I know that was also a concern with some of the stuff having to do with PS4 streaming and stuff. People were concerned about the infrastructure of our internet. But, you know, obviously, there's still the rumor that Durango is going to be always on. So, you know, that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But I think as far as any predictions or expectations that I have, I definitely see that I definitely think that developers are just going to be assuming that gamers are going to be always online, which sucks because that's not always the case. But I think it is going to be assumed, largely, that always on is just going to be a thing. And, you know, inevitably it will probably just will be pretty much commonplace. But, I mean, I think it is pretty commonplace. But, you know, I think that, you know, despite the controversy that always on can bring to the table, that people will continue to be people, as in developers and publishers, will be continuing to pursue it. That said, I think this whole SimCity debacle is definitely going to kind of, like you said, put up some red flags, and, you know, hopefully developers and publishers are going to be like, okay, we can't have a SimCity on our hands, even if not for consumer, you know, to legitimately try to put a good product out for their consumers, to, you know, from a business standpoint, this is a mess. And, you know, so I think that, yes, we will see always on continue to be a trend that's going to increase. I do hope, I can't say yes or no if it's going to happen, but I hope that SimCity is a wake-up call for, you know, you could do always online, but you gotta do it right. And, you know, I would like to see the always on be done, like we said, for a design motivation, not just to market games or to try and stop piracy.
Excellent. You know, I was going to hit that note that you hit right there at the very end, but that sums it up perfectly for what I was going to say. I think there's a place for always on, but I think it has to be design motivated. And again, even that is not necessarily a popular opinion, but I'm not really here for popular opinions. I'm here for
news and views that
aren't on your radar, but you know, that should be.
Yeah.
Sometimes that means talking about the importance of feminist politics in the games industry, and sometimes that means talking about how, you know, game design has to change and evolve, even when it's not in the best opinions of every gamer. Sometimes
looking forward to a world that is going to be always on, always connected, and, you know, we're already seeing the consoles start to be more social. We have Wii U and the Miiverse. We have the PS4 community looking like it's going to offer some unique things.
Yeah.
Then game developers out there need to think. Journey, for example, is a great example of an always-on game that would not be the same. Like, that I think, is one perfect example of a game.
Can you play that game offline?
I haven't tried. I suppose you could. But, I mean, I think part of the experience of Journey is, you know, teaming up with people that you can only communicate to with a little shout. That's a good question. I mean, honestly, like I said, I don't often think about the always on thing because I guess, you know, I'm part of that group that the developers assume, you know, is always online when they make these sorts of games.
And that was sort of why I was going to ask, because that game would be fundamentally lessened without other people involved.
Yeah, so
But at the same time, I mean, I would think it would still be playable. I can't think of anything in that game that requires two people. So I think that's sort of an interesting look. But
yeah.
In any event, I agree with the point you made as well that EA Maxis's spectacular flop with SimCity is definitely going to keep other publishers and developers on guard as they actively attempt to avoid the mistakes that we've seen made in the last week. And ultimately, I think all of us consumers benefit from that in sort of a really backwards way.
I think my final thought on this is that, you know, you want to do always on, then...
You already gave your final thought.
No, I didn't. No, but continue. If game developers, publishers out there, if you want to do always on, then all y'all need to up the ante and really make some compelling design choices, because honestly, good design choices, great game content, and being honest with your consumers is going to bring in the money. I mean, don't you think that EA Max's customer loyalty is going to
be heavily affected? That was your drop the mic moment. That was your drop the mic moment. You had made a really concise point.
Okay.
I do agree that Max's EA is going to be negatively impacted by this.
Captain Spike, what are your final thoughts?
Look at SimCity. I'm pretty sure they're going to lose sales over this. That tells you what people feel about these sort of I had the perfect word in my head and then it vanished. That sort of tells you what people think about these very inorganic, always online requirements that don't benefit them but do benefit your publisher and your company. So avoid that. But if you can give people a compelling, unique gameplay experience, something like Journey, whether that was always on or not, that's the kind of thing that people will say, okay, that's worth being online for, because even though this is a primarily single-player focused and motivated game moving forward, the multiplayer component really, even being passive, adds so much. So that's the goal. That's what you should be looking at. And for us gamers, I think that it's beneficial, even when in some of these individual game cases like SimCity, I guess there's a lot of people who are probably very upset that they can't play SimCity offline. But if they had done what they said, if the game really did need to be always online, I encourage developers and designers to try new things. And, you know, you have to design new things, otherwise we're going to end up with a world where all games are awfully homogenized and there's very little innovation.
And so it's
not the case here. The case here, unfortunately, is that this game was made and then we were lied to about what we were buying and what we were playing. And that sucks.
That's the greatest crime.
That is definitely the biggest crime here for me.
And I think there's just this assumption that from developers and publishers that consumers are kind of dumb, but gamers are getting smarter and thinking more critically. So,
yeah, that's definitely true. And, you know, was sort of where I was going to go with this, was that, you know, just keep thinking, do your research wherever possible. And, you know, if you don't like what someone's selling, don't buy it. Like, just if you think SimCity looks awful, do not buy it, because it definitely has a lot of negative sides. And the only way change is going to be affected is if you don't buy it. But at the same time, try to keep an open mind and try to actively think about, like, even if something didn't sound good to you initially, maybe it'll turn out not so bad.
Yeah.
That's not the case here, but, you know, who knows? Anyway, I'm clearly repeating myself. I'm clearly
babbling. I do it all the time, so don't feel guilty.
It's time to start with the wrap-up. That means we have three real quick segments for you. I'm going to clock it right now. If we're not done in 10 minutes, I'm going to punch Slidekick in the face.
All right.
Rumor has it.
So we've got two quick rumors here on Rumor Has It, our recurring segment where we look at hearsay that's gotten too big to ignore, you know.
Yeah, you know, we obviously, we don't have a lot of inside information, but we are well informed in the context that we read all of the blogs, we try to read as many of the game sites as possible, and sometimes a little observation goes a long way, and you can just sort of see how the pieces of a rumor fit together into truth.
Yep.
This first one we've got for you is that Assassin's Creed Phoenix Rising.
Rising Phoenix.
Oh, indeed. Rising Phoenix. I really wanted it to be an X-Men game, okay? So, you know, this name, this has sort of popped up in various places over the internet over the last few weeks since the reveal of Black Flag. And just this week, a Spanish retailer, extralife.es, listed Rising Phoenix as a PlayStation Vita game. As well as that, it appears to have an early October release date. October 10th, to be specific, 3 weeks before Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag.
Makes sense.
I'm going to tell you, again, you know, I was talking before the Black Flag reveal happened that the rumors, the way they were coming together, just had the ring of truth. I feel like that's the case here, too.
Yeah.
Ubi went out of their way to state that they were very happy with the sales of Lady Liberty. Assassin's Creed Liberation. And I feel like there's going to be another Assassin's Creed Vita game. This time frame makes sense. The fact that the Assassin's Creed Rising Phoenix title leaked, along with, you know, like the typeface for the game leaked, you know, weeks ago. I think this is very likely. I will be very surprised if Rising Phoenix
I'm curious to see
is
what
not
this,
a Vita game that comes out in October.
And I'll be curious to see what the setting is. You know, I think of Phoenix and think of maybe, like, you know, ancient civilizations or something. So it'll be interesting.
Well, according to the supposed leaked artwork, leaked internal use artwork, it looks very sci-fi-y.
Oh, now that's interesting.
So we'll see.
And we have one more rumor for you all relating to the Nerultimate series of games, also known as Naruto Ultimate Ninja Storm. And this is in particular related to Naruto Shippuden Ultimate Ninja Storm 3. It was briefly listed on Steam.
Which is, of course, not necessarily that big of a deal. But the thing that really sort of seals the deal to me that this is a thing that's going to happen is that later this month at the PAX East panel that they're doing, CyberConnect 2 has announced that there will be a surprise announcement for Naruto Shippuden Ultimate Ninja Storm 3. Easy money bets, of course, are on the idea that Namco Bandai, who does have history working with getting their games published on Steam, is going to have Ultimate Ninja Storm 3 on Steam.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they have Ace Combat up, and they have, you know, Dark Souls was one we talked about here on the show last year. And that piece, I actually liked that PC port of Dark Souls a lot, so
I heard it was really good.
I'm really looking forward to this. This is definitely a game, I think, that would work, that would benefit from some full-screen anti-aliasing and a locked frame rate. Like, because I have been playing Nerultimate Ninja Storm 3 this past week, and there are times where the frame rate drops really hard. So
yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, well, it's a beautiful game. It's one of the prettiest games I've ever seen. And I guess the trade-off is that sometimes it's just doing too much.
Yes, it makes me think of the One Piece Musou game, how that kind of has issues sometimes,
too. It has frame rate issues in two-player mode. I don't really think that counts. Like,
okay.
For me...
Well, so, any Nerultimate fans probably won't be surprised. Won't be surprised by CyberConnect 2's announcement. So, that does it for our Rumor Has It this week, right?
Yep.
We can let our Adele voices rest for next time.
5 minutes down, dude. Let's go.
Okay, so it's time for us to talk about.
I said, hey, what's going on?
So, what you been playing?
Mega Man 2!
Okay.
I've been playing it on Virtual Console 3DS, like we talked about on Game Buoy. I beat, like, 6 of the Robot Masters, and it's rad. I've also been playing a little bit of New Super Mario Bros. 2.
Oh, finally! What did you think of that?
I like it, but, you know, this is one of my concerns that I had brought up before was that playing it after New Super Mario Bros. U, I'd be a little underwhelmed. And I am a little underwhelmed, but I still recognize that it's a good game. It's just that New Super Mario Bros. U is really great. The other thing, really quickly, that I want to talk about is that I've been playing, in light of the Rock Band DLC announcement, of the Rock Band DLC ending, I've had a revitalized interest in playing Rock Band. So I actually picked up a Pro Guitar for Rock Band 3.
Oh, neat.
Not the actual guitar, but, you know, the one that Mad Cat's made. And And so I've been trying to play pro mode and, you know, really just having fun playing Rock Band again. So good times. Good times.
Excellent.
Captain Spike, what you been playing?
Well, I've been talking a lot on this episode already about one of the games I played a lot this week, and that was, of course, SimCity.
Right.
And the rest of my time this week has been spent with Rock Band.
Oh, but I thought you said you played Neural Ultimate, too.
I played Neural Ultimate for like an hour and a half, but I played Rock Band for like 6.5 hours, so that really is what gets the mention.
That's great. Are you getting chopped back up?
You know what? I take that back. There was a major game, because it's been a few weeks since we played this, since we did a recording. There's a major game I played all the way through and loved it. It's probably my second favorite game of the year.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
I played my fucking Tomb Raider. Pardon my French. I am incredibly happy with Tomb Raider.
I've heard great things.
It is a straight up freaking 3D Metroidvania game. Like, I am stunned and shocked.
Are you shocked and stunned?
I am also shocked and stunned. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, I have to say my partner did work on Tomb Raider. That having been said, I would be super inclined just not to say anything if I didn't actually feel really positively strongly about the game. I have never talked about any of the other games that he's worked on, because they're simply not games I enjoyed. And I'm not really here to badmouth games. I just prefer to not talk about games I don't like. Tomb Raider feels like the way I felt the first time I played the first Soul Reaver game.
Oh, wow.
And that is, I mean, you know, that was also Crystal Dynamics, so I guess they probably share some DNA somewhere.
Oh, excellent.
But I was blown away. I had, you know, all the controversy. I had come in expecting to hate the game. That actually caused some conflict at home because I was really appalled that his studio had released a game that was so against any and all feminist ideal that we frequently discuss. But the actual product, I was really happy with it. I actually enjoyed the story. And if you listen to Game Buoy, of course, you know that story is usually not a big deal for me. I am just absolutely stunned with this game, with its really awesome and fun traversal mechanics, and of course, Metroidvania world design.
That's great, and you know, I feel happy for Crystal Dynamics because, you know, they kind of had to, you know, revitalize the Tomb Raider franchise, and you know, they were kind of, you know, that they were the Tomb Raider studio, but I think they can really. You know, they've really proven with this one from the reception that they've gotten.
Hey, being the Tomb Raider studio ain't so bad.
Yeah.
So, that ties in perfectly to our next segment, which, of course, is our running commentary on what's good going on in games journalism and what's not. I'm talking, of course, about Smash or Trash! For our Smash this week, that is to say, the article that we most think really was just knocking it out of the park this week, we suggest you go to Joystick and read their article, The Sentimental Process Behind Gung-Ho's PS1 Imports. This is, of course, about a news story that we talked about this week. And
Sentimental Graffiti.
Yes. And basically, they just talk about why this is sort of a really cool thing that's happening and what Gung-Ho's profit margin expectations are, etc. Again, I recommend you read it. I think it's really good.
Yep, nice job, Joystick.
Slykick, why don't you tell our audience about this week's trash?
So this one was over at PSU.com, PlayStation Universe. It's an opinion piece called Crystal Dynamics Deserves an Apology from Gamers for Hasty Tomb Raider, quote, controversy, end quote. There are a few, and I mean a very, very few valid points here. Otherwise,
why don't you explain the piece?
It's basically saying that the controversy and outlash against Crystal Dynamics for the trailer that we had initially seen where it appeared that Lara Croft was about to be raped. And I apologize. I probably should have mentioned all that, you know, this might be a sensitive issue. But, you know, we have talked about it before. That, you know, no, that's not how it plays out. That, you know, that scene is essential to her to building her into a strong woman, and that, you know, she kills for the first time, spoiler alert, You know, it's a survival instinct in that they should be applauded because they made her a powerful woman and not just a skimpy, buxom babe who's a damsel in distress.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, the thing about this piece and the reason why I thought it was worth bringing up here is because there are a very small handful of valid points. Very small. But ultimately, if you read this article, the person who wrote it, whom I'm assuming is a straight man, his entire argument basically comes down to, because I didn't think there was anything sexist or offensive in the original Tomb Raider reveals, everybody else should agree with me, and since they didn't, now they owe Crystal an apology for being sheep that were unable to think for themselves after Kotaku stoked the fires. The thing is, to me, Kotaku's bringing this whole controversy to light is the best thing Kotaku ever did in the history of ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, the Crystal Dynamics people, like, outright came out and referred to the scene as the attempted rape scene, which, in the context of the game, it isn't even. I've played the game, but I guess they were so falling over themselves with responding to this controversy that they really misrepresented themselves and their game. And I will never apologize to them for thinking that they were being fucking awful people in the way that they presented this.
I think not only with the issues we talked about with this article at large, but I think
sorry,
also,
I'm having a hard time sticking to just the article because it's like,
and I think we might be heading the same place. I think what's more harmful is the type of discussion that it opened up. And I just want to put out there some of these things. These are taken verbatim from the comment section. And so these are not the views of Game Buoy, and we're bringing them up.
Oh, hell no.
We're bringing them up because we are offended by them. Commenter Keenstoff said, as a side note, I disagree with feminism myself purely because I think it should be about getting equal rights for everyone. We're all human, blah, blah, blah. Bish. There was also Thomas Horsberg. said, I don't recall any controversy over the scene in Far Cry 3, which not so subtly suggested that a man had been in prison for several days and repeatedly raped by a lunatic. Is male rape more edgy and thus more acceptable? Is there simply a double standard, or perhaps critics of classic lore were just looking for a new excuse to bring down the franchise? I'm going with all of the above. I can't even...
No, because you know what? You missed the fact that... Not you. I mean, this commenter. Missed the fact that, no, you're totally right. The Far Cry thing is also inappropriate. However, they also... Crytekker, whomever did Far Cry, they didn't advertise, like, oh, be a dude and watch your main character get assaulted and then feel like you need to protect him. Because that is how Crystal framed this entire Lara Croft thing. Like, oh, this is gonna happen. She's a woman. We want you to feel like you have to protect her.
And I saved the worst one for the end. And this is really why this is a problem, and, you know, why the importance of looking at females and feminism in the gaming industry is a very important discussion. Commenter Osborne LV said, my only complaint is that the guys didn't finish what they started. It's a fantasy of mine to see Lara Croft get gangbanged. I paid to play that scene. That is absolutely disgusting and hideous. And
I'm done.
Yeah.
So that's our trash of the week. It's
because
trash.
It opened, because not only was it
a
trashy
awful
article, but it opened up hateful discussion and backwards thinking. So we cannot abide that.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was awful.
Let's give out those social links so that people can interact with us.
So we have some feedback this week.
We do.
We're going to go over our feedback, and then we will tell you how to reach us.
I can do this first one. And it's actually, we had tweeted a message of thanks to 1UP and Jeremy Parrish, and he replied to us, said, thank you for reading. So GameSpy, a.k.a. Jerry Parrish, replied to us, and I feel happy.
I was totally going to tease you for being so happy that he messaged you back, but then I was happy too, so.
Yeah. We had another tweet from Boy of Stone, in regards to our last episode when we had just posted it, he replied right away on Twitter with, "I can't wait to listen to this." And that was in regards to our previous episode about the Sony meeting 2013. We hope you enjoyed that episode, Boy of Stone, and we hope you enjoy this one and all future episodes to come.
We also had Fix Your Face 0814, which is awesome because I like Dillinger Escape Plan 2, saying, "I am so counting the girls that drop on your show."
As in girl.
Yeah, there hasn't been many girls today.
There hasn't.
So, of course, I had replied that, you know, there was probably too many. We'd try to tone it down. And he encouragingly had stated, "There is no such thing as too much girl power."
Girl!
It's that time once again.
It's that time once again.
So, now why don't you tell people what are GameBuie's social links?
We love Twitter. You can tweet us at GameBuie.org.
We love Twitter.
GameBuie.org spelled out DOTORG for the .org part. Because if you had a dot in the Twitter handle, I don't think that's how Twitter handles work. So GameBuie, DOTORG on Twitter.
Well, of course, we also always want your likes on Facebook.
We're at Facebook.com/GameBuie.
And however you like something on Google+, Plus, I don't really know. Okay, plus one us on Google+. What is our Google+ account?
If you want to go to our Google+ account, you can go to GameBuie.org and click the little G+ button. Or search for us on Google+, because Google+ does not have smart URLs.
Oh, so what, the URL's like 124XYBZY2X?
Yeah, go a couple episodes back if you want to hear me read that whole URL, if you're really that interested in typing it into your address bar.
I love that you did that.
We also have a Tumblr, so you can find us at GameBuie.
Like my status, if you got a Tumblr.
You can find us at GameBuie.tumblr.com, and you can reblog us, you can answer our social links questions, and say hi to us there. We also love iTunes reviews, ratings, and subscriptions. We know that there are many ways to subscribe to podcasts, and we love it when you come straight to GameBuie.org to listen to us. But if you're an iTunes person, say hi to us over there. We like to see your five-star
also,
ratings.
Also, yeah, give us a review, because we like you. You should like us.
We will read your review on air.
Unless it's awful, in which case we'll still read it on air, but we might do funny voices and make fun of you.
Yeah. So, Captain Spike, give your shout-outs. Who should people be listening to?
So, you know, I talked about Fix Your Face 0814.
Except he don't gotta fix his face because it's fine.
I wasn't gonna say that because I ain't trying to put him on the spot, but I'm also not gonna disagree with you. So, he is on a show called Koopa Club. They're very similar to what we do. They're also gay. They also talk a lot about Nintendo. Check these guys out. I think they're great, and I listen to, like, every episode. And, of course, Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice. What did I say?
No, you said that. I was just repeating.
Oh,
every gamer.
I thought you were correct.
Like, yeah, every gamer. Every gamer.
And, you know, from whom we take ever so many of our cues. Of course, Rob Roberts, with whom we now share screen time, by which I mean airtime, is, of course, the lead of Orange Lounge Radio, and is on a show with us where we are just catty-hoes up in each other's faces called Reading is Fundamental, the seasonal show where we sip tea and dish dirt on Logo's highest-rated drag queen competition reality show RuPaul's Drag Race. We are, in fact, a little behind because of scheduling issues, but my understanding is that those are more or less now behind us.
Yep.
Some shout-outs?
I'd like to shout-out to the Nerdgasm Network, the wildest 3 hours of shock jock video game radio that you will ever come across. They do a lot of live streaming, so check them out over on the Nerdgasm Network. I'd like to shout-out to, even though, like we said, we aren't really in the World of Warcraft mood, but there are two great WoW podcasts out there, The Best Little Horde House in Azeroth, or Horde House for short, featuring Rob Roberts and friends, is the place for World of Warcraft news, but never too seriously. And Girls Gone WoW, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO. And last but certainly not least, Video Game Outsiders, which is where you get video gaming from the average player's perspective. I'd also like to shout out once again to Zelda Reorchestrated for our fabulous opening theme. Go support them today.
With that, of course, I think we've reached our end. It is rather timely, by which I mean we've been going forever. As always, thank you for listening. I am your host, Captain Spike. With me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yar.
We here implore you, keep thinking, keep playing, and see you, cowgirl, someday, somewhere.
Was
more than 15 minutes.